this reel of Seawall Movies, we head back to the early 90s for the Broadway-inspired play-turn-movie Noises Off. In theaters, we check out the Great Depression bootlegger drama Lawless. In Trailer World, we review the John C. Reilly animated joint Wreck-It Ralph. In news, there's talk of a Christmas Story official sequel. We lose the incredible Michael Clark Duncan, and Sam Raimi promises that the Evil Dead remake will be well worth the wait. It's the 121st reel of Seawall Movies, Rule 34.
I'm gonna make him an offer again.
I love the smell of napalm in the morning.
Go ahead. Make up my day.
All right, Mr. DeMille, I'm ready for my close-up.
May the force be with you.
Rosebud. Hello, everybody. Welcome to a brand spanking new reel of Seawall Movies. My name is Jeff, and I would like to introduce my bootlegging co-hosts, Ray and Steve. How are you guys doing today? With that, let's get into the news.
News on the mark.
More on why that's funny later. In the meantime, in the Kill It With Fire category, A Christmas Story gets a sequel. Wait, what? Coming straight to DVD bargain bins in October 30th. Okay.
Yeah.
excuse me? Did this terrible movie have to get another movie?
Well, first of all, most people don't think it's a terrible movie.
I'm biased because of the ho 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 scene.
Okay. Yeah. What I find funny is that I love how they've tacked official sequel onto the actual name of the movie. So if you actually watch this horrible trailer, that's Christmas Story 2, the official sequel. It looks bad. It looks really bad. And I don't know if they're trying to cash in on some sort of nostalgia seeking or something. But yeah, no. It just looks horrible. And I would like to see it die.
Why can't we leave Ralphie alone?
Yeah.
Leave Ralphie alone!
There's just, you know, we've talked about this over and over and over, that there are just some movies that don't need a sequel.
Right.
And this is one that is a classic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and majority of the world, other than Jeff, likes this movie. So, you know, like, why are we doing this? Why?
Yeah, there was actually a sort of sequel to this already.
Right.
Back in 94, it was like A Summer Story or something. And it had a completely different cast. It didn't have the same family at all, I don't even think, in it. And it was pretty bad.
To say the least.
So, imagine that.
Yeah. So just I wanted to put this on here as a warning to others. Like, you know, it's coming out. It's going straight to DVD and Blu-ray. Not even going to try to even make it out in the theaters. So, you know, that usually means it's absolutely wonderful.
High quality.
Mm-hmm.
Made for sci-fi.
Oh, God.
Oh. Made for some other poor channel.
Made
for PBS. I don't know. Just throwing things out here. Okay, so, Kill me. Moving on. In the sad news market, Green Mile actor Michael Clark Duncan died at 54.
That's scary as crap.
Yeah, I know, right? It's like, I never would have in a million years figured that this dude would have gone so soon.
Yeah.
I don't know if he had, you know, heart problems or heart disease or something, but, you know, when I saw that he died, I was just like, what? And then when I read what he died of, I was just like, I always just remember this dude being huge and somewhat healthy looking, but you know, who knows, you know, it's kind of scary. But yeah, he's a South Sider from Chicago. So, you know, he's been in a couple of really good movies. I loved his character of Bear in Armageddon. No. So.
Well, and I think the hardest thing for a lot of people to swallow with this one was just the fact that, you know, 54 dying of a heart attack, you know, some of those things that just didn't add up.
Right.
Like, and I know that there were a lot of people that were making, you know, points about like, get out there, see your doctor regularly, all this kind of stuff. So I'm wondering if there was something that I missed along the way of that he was a doctor phobe or something. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But regardless, I'm just like, wow, you know, just for someone who was kind of definitely in the prime of his acting career and still showing up in a lot of things, like he's going to be missed. Because yeah. he's definitely a well-known, like, he's one of those people, like, he gets on screen and you're like, that's him.
Right.
He's not a Gary Oldman where you don't necessarily know it's Gary Oldman.
Yeah, he doesn't meld. Know? He doesn't right. meld very well into a no. physical.
Exactly.
So
he's done a ton of voices.
Yeah.
Yeah, that so too.
In addition to all of his great, you know, on-screen acting, he was also some great voices. I mean, he was in Kung Fu Panda, the first one, as Commander Vakir, which I think was the bad guy.
Mm.
And what else was he?
Kilowog.
And there was one other one I saw that I thought was kind of cool. I can't remember. Damn it. Okay. There's a couple episodes of Family Guy and such. He was in Brother Bear, too.
Hmm. Yeah, he's just been. That's one thing. Like you, he's kind of like that James Earl Jones, of today. You know, it's like when he's on screen, you know who he is. When you hear his voice, you can recognize it. You know, it's one of those things. And he's done a wide range of things, from super serious to super Friends,
right.
or kind of stuff. And so everybody kind of got touched by him. He's one of those. He's a super versatile actor for being as unique as he is. So definitely will be missed in Hollywood.
Oh yeah, for sure.
I did like his kingpin in Daredevil.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, those kind of roles like Kingpin are the ones that it's like. When you think it's like he was like born to play that kind of role. Like, I mean, he had the physical presence to play it. He had the voice to play it. You know, it's like the person you think I can imagine the casting directors going, who are we going to get to play King? And they'd like instantly pop into their head. This dude would be perfect.
Hey, I remember him from Armageddon. He would be perfect. Actually, probably at that point in time, the Green Mile, but still.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But still, with Daredevil being so memorable, you know, he... but I don't
care what you say. I love that movie.
Okay.
I thought...
But you also like Tomb Raider. So, nah.
Well, besides the fact that people could say, you know, with the fist with the white guy, you shouldn't have had a black guy playing the character. Me. Well, I say F you because he made an awesome kingpin.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm not dissing him. I was trying to say that he was a memorable character and actor from that film. Mm-hmm. You know, in an otherwise desolate film.
Right.
And in the... what department is this? This is the No Shit Sherlock department. There we go. Raimi promises Evil Dead remake will shock audiences.
Yeah. So Raimi did a little bit of an interview because his production company was responsible for The Possession, which I'm sort of hearing good things about. I'm assuming it's due to inconvenient timing that this didn't end up on our list to see. But yeah, so he talks about the Possession, and then towards the end of this article, the guy interviewing him talks to him about the Resident Evil or the Evil Dead Resident Evil. I'm looking at the Matrix right now.
Right.
So he's talking to him and starts asking him a few questions. And, you know, he talks about, like, you know, how close to the original film is it, which is kind of funny because he says that it's not the same characters. It's about a group of five characters who go up to a cabin and find a Book of the Dead. And I'm like,
isn't that the movie?
Yeah. I mean, other than it's like you're changing up the characters, that's like been every Evil Dead movie, really. So that makes me kind of laugh. And then he said, would you describe it as a reboot, a remake, a reimagining, or a prequel? And he said, I guess it's a reimagining. I've always hated that word. But the most interesting comments that he made, which gives me a little bit of hope, is they asked him why he chose to redo The Evil Dead. And he said, the interviewer kind of led him into this question and says, do you feel like people aren't making these kinds of scary movies anymore? And he says, that's exactly right. They aren't making this kind of movie right now. I think the audience likes to see something different, especially the horror audiences. They're hungry for things that are new. To make another found footage movie wouldn't be good for me. Horror works in trends, which is fine. I just want right now Ghost House to make a different original type of picture. And I think Alvarez's take, even though he's seen the original Evil Dead, is totally original. I think it's going to shock the audience. I haven't seen anything like it in a while. Mm. So I don't know how much of that is tooting his own horn, you know, or how much of that is actually, you know, true. But I still found it an interesting comment that he's, you know, sort of talks about, we don't really make these kinds of scary movies anymore. Like, you know, the trend is to make the found footage movie. Mm-hmm. And I don't really want to do that.
Right. And I wouldn't disagree with them.
Mm-hmm. Yay, no more found footage movies.
Yay! It's when we get so pissed off that we don't realize it's a found footage movie.
Right. Like, they sneak it on you.
Yeah. But I would agree with them. I mean, I want to see somebody, and I think, to be truthful, Cabin in the Woods probably got the closest to that 80s you know, horror kind of stuff.
Right.
You know, that of anybody with you know, a twist of today. So, you know, I would really like to see something in the style of that. You know, if they keep it in kind of that same vein with more practical effects and some dark lighting and stuff like that, where, I mean, make it less campy, because it's just like we talked about, like, you can't make camp work intentionally. It just has to kind of happen.
Yeah.
But, it, you know, and that first Evil Dead, of course, was campy as hell. but I mean, Evil Dead 2 was worse. Mm-hmm. But and then you get into Army of Darkness, which is just complete camp.
Oh, I love it though.
Me too. But I'm just like, the level of campiness just kept going and going and going. But I it would be cool to kind of see a serious Evil Dead movie that was interesting, you know, as long as they don't go in the same routes of things. Like, they did a remake of House of Demons.
Mm-hmm.
Which is one that, you know, in the 80s was actually pretty good. The remake was awful.
Right.
The remake was awful because, like, you know, like, anytime anybody turned into a demon, it was an indistinguishable, you know, demon. And the way that they turned made no sense compared to how they did it in the original.
Mm-hmm.
And stuff like that. Like, they tried to bring it up, but it was a fail.
Gotcha.
So I hope that Raimi's good. We know that. He's quality. So I'm looking forward to seeing where he goes with this.
Yeah, it intrigues me. Yeah, I do believe that Raimi overall has a more positive track record. He's not always been a hit for me. I didn't like Drag Me to Hell. But that's partially for some very personal reasons that I didn't like that movie. So maybe at some point in the future, I'll need to revisit that one and sort of look at it with a much different set of eyes. But I am intrigued. I am intrigued by his comment, which is why I put that on here.
Mm-hmm. Hey, let's hope.
Yep.
I mean, the people that are looking forward to it will, I mean, it's gonna be one of those movies. It's gonna be loved because of the previous incarnations that have been, you know, cult status. So people are gonna be ready to destroy it or love it. So
right,
you know, he's got to make it an effort. He's definitely got to put an effort into it and not gonna turn out shit, because if he does, you know, the fanboys like myself and others will definitely tear him a new a-hole.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're going to hit a classic, you better knock it out the park.
Right. All righty.
Mm-hmm. And with that, let's talk about pop on Facebook. We got a Facebook like from Jason Bartello.
Yay. He's one of my
Jason.
I was going to say he's a Tampa guy.
My buddies.
Sweet.
Yay, Jay.
Woo. Hey, Jason. Thank you, Jason.
With that, let's move into the past.
You're telling me that you built a time machine out of a DeLorean?
Noises Off, 1992, 57% rotten, the 83% audience. Directed by Peter Bogdanovich, starring Michael Caine, Carol Burnett, Denholm Elliott, Julie Haggerty, Mary Lou Henner, Mark Linn-Baker, and Christopher Reeve, John Ritter, and Nicolette Sheridan. Big ensemble cast.
Yeah. Mary Lou Henner, whatever happened to her? Do we know? Has she done anything?
I'm not sure.
Yeah. I think she kind of shows up on episodes of shows now.
Okay. Because she's just someone, when I saw her, I was like, man.
Yeah, there was a point where she was everywhere. Yeah, it was a point where she was everywhere kind of thing.
So... Gotta say, gotta give the shout out to the Chicagoans. She's another Chicago native. So,
so I have to say how I got into Noises Off. My chose this was actually it was while I was in the master's trip in college. We were discussing movies and there was. I don't remember if we're specifically discussing plays or movies, but we were talking about comedy and some of the kind of comedy of errors in this the quick wit and such. And one of the things was, if you want to see a lot of door slamming and this people coming in and out and in and out and out of stuff, you really need to see Noises Off. And that's where I ran across it. Maybe it wasn't in college, maybe it was in high school, but somewhere in there was when I was doing theater. I was backstage when we were talking about it or something. And that's where this came from. And I've realized something, because I swear that the first time I've seen it, I saw this movie, I watched it all the way through just fine. Mm-hmm. My experience this time was completely different.
Mm-hmm.
It's what I call a start and stop movie for me. Like, oh my god, no, oh my god, space bar to pause the movie.
Yeah. What had you, what, I'm just curious, was there a particular reason why you wanted us to see this one?
Just because I've always really liked this movie.
Yeah. It's not a mean question. I'm just curious.
Yeah, I just like that. I mean, there's no really specific reason. I'm like, oh yeah, there was that movie called Noises Off from, based on the play, and it had the doors slamming and stuff. Mm-hmm. It had the three different acts with the, you know, they're doing the rehearsal, then they have basically the second act is backstage during the show, and the third act is in front of the stage during the show, and it just kind of has this back and forth, and it's just really, really interesting, and the timing of it all, which is, when you think about it, acting and then just kind of, they're doing it pretty much as if it was a stage performance, and there's a lack of cuts in this movie. Too. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of times where they have nice long shots and the actors are just doing their thing and the camera's just, you know, following the action, and they're going in and out of the doors and backstage. They're walking out further backstage, and they're walking back to the back of the set, and just all the timing for everything, and they're like passing the bottle and the flower around and
the acts,
doing all this time. This is a really, I think I appreciate this movie probably more for the technical aspect. Also, I mean, it is to me funny. Mm-hmm. Right. You guys, but to me, it's, I think it's funny. The only thing is, it's that type of humor, which I fear immensely.
Well, that was when I started watching this. Stop. When I started watching this, I was like, wait, is this Jeff's week?
Yeah.
Why did he pick this? Like, I was trying to figure it out because I'm like, he can't watch this movie. It's going to freak him out.
And you know, it has great stars. I mean, it's got Michael Caine as Carol Burnett, as John Ritter, as Christopher Reeves in it.
Yeah.
I mean, or Reeve. There's no S in his name.
Yeah.
George Reeves, Christopher Reeve.
Right, correct.
it's just, I like this movie more for the technical aspect, more than the embarrassing comedic movements, which the way they do it is just brilliant for it. So people who are okay with this, mm-hmm. I think, would really enjoy it. And maybe people who need to be more of, I don't know, older, like more theater or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, and I'm not sure what it is. Maybe it's the lack of cuts, and it's the long way that the camera follows the actors. But it definitely has that sort of guy on stage with a video camera just sort of filming everything feel to me, which sometimes I have a hard time dealing with. I like the feeling of film. I like the feeling of cinema. And when I don't get that easily, sometimes I sort of reject what I'm, you know, seeing as, you know, I don't know. It's just kind of weird that way.
Every time you guys say that, I don't get it. The only time where I've really seen the difference between like film and video was Run Lola Run, where I knew there was this like real, because he actually did video and he actually did film for the two different areas. So, but every time you guys say that, I don't notice it. Maybe it's just, I don't care how many frames per second this damn thing is recorded in.
No, that's fine. It doesn't really have anything to do with frames per second. It's sort of the difference between like digital photography and standard film photography. Yes, you can take the picture of the same thing, but with the film, you're introducing this whole other medium of, you know, based on the way the film is developed, it takes on a certain characteristic. It has a certain grain to it that can influence the way the movie looks, where video doesn't have any of that stuff in it.
Right.
It feels sort of sterile is the best way I could describe it. Which, well,
we talked about it with Sorted Lives. That's probably the most, I remember, like the most jarring example was Sorted Lives just looks like people were just in a sound, you know, we're in a house filming with a video camera. Mm-hmm. There's a feel to it that if you threw that on a big screen, it wouldn't feel cinematic.
Right.
You know, and that engulfed, like, we took the time to prep these shots and this, that, and, you know, that kind of stuff. I feel that a lot less with Noises Off. I don't mind that feel. But when I'm watching Noises Off, as a person who loves documentaries, it comes off very behind the scenes.
Right.
You know, it comes off very much like it's, you're a voyeur in this whole aspect of it versus they're filming the play.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? So I kind of look at it like that. And if I put myself in the back, you know, thinking like, oh my God, all this craziness is going on backstage and this is the, you know, prep. If I think of it more like it's documentary style,
right?
I like it.
So you hinted on it a little bit, but let's just jump into that. This movie, watching this movie, exhausted me. Mm-hmm. Like, it's hard to keep up with what's going on sometimes. Like,
it's a very fast movie.
I'm looking for that switch that's on the podcast app that plays it back slower speed. I'm like, do I have this on my Blu-ray player? Can I slow this down?
With this at half speed.
Because I was like, holy crap, this is just tiring. And the funny thing is, I wish I kind of would have had I should have taken a picture of myself watching it, because the second act backstage.
Yeah.
When the guard is just watching everything that's going on, that look on his face, I think I had the exact same look on my face. Kind of like, you know, you people are all crazy. Like,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, well, you know, you get at the beginning that it's going to be a difficult play because of the timing.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? And you get that Michael Caine is just done with this particular group of actors, and he's just like, "Let's just open the damn show. I'm finished with you." Right. You know, you kind of get that feel. Just waiting to see what happens. Let's just get it over with. So it starts off with like a slow, frantic pace. And then the middle, it gets very frantic. And then by the end, it's just completely frenetic. Like, you just can't keep up with all the things going on. It's like, this is in a corner, that's in a corner. This person's arguing, that person's doing that. And it's the pace of the movie goes from being, like, realistic to follow to almost insane.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And so it builds and builds and builds, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is something that I really would have enjoyed to see the play. Mm. I think seeing the play would have been pretty awesome, especially if they're able to pull off all of those things with the timing and everything being just perfect. I mean, it's one of those things where, and we always sort of joke around about this where I work, because one of my things that I have to do in my job is I have to document potential defects or problems in product to show, like, so that we have a visual reference. And mm-hmm. it seems like it's 100 times harder for me to intentionally make something wrong than it is for it to just accidentally happen.
Okay.
So the fact that these people are, you know, screwing up the timing on some things intentionally so that they make a mistake, I just have that in the back of my head, like, this must be extremely difficult to pull off. You know, and do it right and do it every day, every night, you know, and make it look believable that you're not just all a bunch of fools.
Right. It's not forced or just complete slapstick.
Right. And don't get me wrong. There are some genuinely funny moments. I found that I laughed a lot more at the extreme ends of the movie. I laughed at the beginning, especially with Christopher Reeve's little thing where he's trying to find his motive. Like, why would I take the bag into the room?
Right.
You know, like, he's so upset about, he can't figure out why he would take the bag into the room. And, you know, Michael Caine's just, you can see like Michael Caine's frustration is just like, ugh, all right, I'm going to make something up, you know, and just give you something to go with. And he's just like, oh, thank you. Now I don't have to worry, you know, I don't have to sit here and toil over this. That generally cracked me up. And then, when things just started going completely bonkers at the end, you know, I giggled a bunch at that. I thought that was pretty funny. But, you know, during the middle, again, I had that same sort of look on my face as the guard, just kind of like, oh, my God.
One thing for me, I mean, I've seen this several times before, and it's been a long time. Mm-hmm. I remember the very first time I saw it, I just fell in love with it. You know, and every time I kind of have watched it again, I think I've just lost, because I know it's coming.
Right.
I've kind of lost the energy for it. But I notice in this viewing, particularly, like, the first act, I love the first act.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I could watch that first act over and over again. But once it gets to the second act, it's like, okay, I could take it or leave it. And by the third act, I was like, oh, well. You know, I've just given up trying to follow it.
Right.
You know, I kind of lost my energy for it. So, you know, if I had that first act, if it ended at the first act or, you know, going into the second act, like, I would have been perfectly fine with just that first half of the movie. You know, I mean, I get what they're talking about. Like, they were just trying to say, you know, how things progressively got worse between the cast. And you know what? And it makes sense, because if you have to be that tight with everything you're doing,
right?
One little grain of sand, you know, that throws everything off.
Right.
And over time, as you're doing it more and more and more, that grain of sand just gets more and more annoying until it turns into a blister, you know,
or something. Right.
You know, I mean, like, you get it, you know, you get why it gets so much more frenetic as the time goes along. But I just, you know, like, as being someone who enjoys theater and plays and things like that, like, that first act is my favorite, as they're trying to paint it all out and You know, and my favorite person in this entire movie, to be honest with you, even though she's more of a foil than anything else, is Carol Burnett.
Mm-hmm.
Just her. She was just fucking hilarious in this.
Right.
Movie. Probably because she's more the straight comedian of anybody on the, you know, and the whole thing. But her character was just, is kind of the center of this whole entire story, you know, and of the play. And throughout, she's just adding more and more to her situation. And then by the end, she's just frazzled. And you know, if the center is frazzled, it's all coming down.
Right.
You know? So.
Yeah, I would say that my favorite character in the thing is Selsdon, good old Denholm.
True.
You know, it makes me sad. I didn't realize that this was his last movie. You know, so that made me a little sad. But it was good to see him in this, and I kind of laughed at his sort of, you know, they never really explained what was wrong with him, whether he was just deaf or crazy or senile or both.
Yeah.
It just, I loved his sort of aloofness to everything that was going on. Like, you know, y'all are crazy. I'm going to go take a nap over right. here.
And then they just point him and he does everything perfectly. And
right.
I think that probably the oddest choice in this movie was Cousin Larry. He just didn't seem to fit in to anything.
Yeah, he seemed a little out of place. He, out of everything, I mean, obviously, other than the fact that it's got, you know, John Ritter and Christopher Reeve in it, he's the guy out of the whole thing that sort of dates the movie for me.
Yeah. Like,
places it's the hair. In a particular time frame, you know?
Yeah, it's the curly, long hair. Yeah.
So, yeah. But.
Where'd Jeff go?
Oh, he's still here.
He's hiding.
Oh, I was just checking. I was like,
letting you talk.
He's pushed the space bar.
I was like, he didn't jump in to say who his favorite character was, so I was moving it along. Did you have a favorite? Do you have a favorite in this?
You know, not really. I kind of like them all for different reasons. Maybe more, you know, Carol Burnett, and yeah. I agree with the Carol and Denholm, but I also like John Ritter and Christopher Reeve as well. And then everybody else just kind of supports those people. And they're all awesome. I love Poppy.
Mm-hmm. Oh, right.
I love her to death. I just love that actress, too.
Yeah, Julie Haggerty.
She has that voice, and she just always seems so sweet and innocent.
And she's always getting the crap kicked out of her. Yeah.
Poor girl. So, I don't really have a specific character, but I kind of like them all. And I think I just am so impressed with the performances, with how well they did the show, because it had to be really difficult for most of that. I mean, I'd really be impressed with the actual play, because they're basically doing that exact same thing. Well, not exact same thing, but close enough. On stage, live, in front of people, and they don't have any of that cut. They don't have any being like they can do a retake or something like that.
Well, the one saving grace, I think, to this kind of performance in a stage play is that if somebody screws up, like I did notice there's a scene where John Ritter's character comes kind of running down the stairs and he sort of trips.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that was an intentional trip or that was like him actually tripping. And they just were like, just keep it in there. Like, because it works with the frenetic pace of the movie or the play, you could screw up unintentionally. And as long as everyone around you is sort of really good at, you know, adapting to a situation and improvising, I bet you they could work in somebody screwing something up, and you'd never know.
I think that was part of the point. Yeah, I think that's part of the point of the show too, is probably being like, we're open for improv anytime during the show because we know there's probably going to be some mistakes. Just go with it.
And some try of, to bring some of the around. Best some of the best theater I've ever seen is improv. You know, if you've got people who are really good at it and can pull it off and have the chemistry together, it can be amazing. So,
Agreed.
I'm so impressed with improv people. I cannot improv to save my life. I am so terrible at improv. So, I love seeing improv shows. Whose line is it anyway, for Christ's sakes?
Yeah. Well, not exactly improv per se. There's a stage, a little stage show by a band called the Neo Futurists here in Chicago, called Too Much Light Makes Baby Go Blind. And it's the premise of it's 30 plays in 30 minutes. So it's very frantic, very fast. Everything happens once it starts. They start a clock, and once that clock starts, it counts down, and they have until the clock stops to get as many plays in as they can. And the audience has to shout out. There's numbers on the stage, and you have to shout out the numbers, and the cast picks them at random and acts out whatever the play is. So it's a very frantic sort of experience. They have to react to certain different things because they involve the audience, and sometimes you never know what the audience is going to do. So it's very, very similar to this sort of performance.
I should then also something similar. The complete works of William Shakespeare are abridged by the Reduced Shakespeare Company.
No.
Where they do, like, they do all of Shakespeare's histories in one scene. They focus on a couple, like they had a longer version of Romeo and Juliet, and then Hamlet is the last second half of the show.
Right. And I misspoke. It's 30 plays in 60 minutes. They get 2 minutes each, or as much time as it takes them to get done. But it's pretty crazy. Some of the plays are like 30 seconds long. But yeah, if you're ever in Chicago, I think they've got one in New York City too. Check it out.
Cool.
That'd be interesting. So, what have we learned from Noises Off? We have learned doors and sardines. That's what it's all about. A wellspring of human action is deep and cloudy. And when you want to avoid paying taxes, stay in Spain. That's what we've learned from Noises Off. I've always seemed to have a hard time watching comedy of hers, and this is definitely one of them. The movie is great based on the play, so it can't really say there's anything wrong with it. I just had start and stop time watching it. I think the reason why I really like it so much is because of the technicality of it. The timing of going in and out of the doors and all the speed that's happening in it. I think you should check it out for sure.
Yeah, something about this just didn't translate very well for me. Like I said, I imagine I would like to see the stage play. I think I would enjoy it more. And I'm going to reword this because it didn't come out the way I had it in my head. I found parts of this funny, but overall, it was just exhausting to me. It was very cool to see John Ritter and Christopher Reeve back up on the screen because it's been so long since I've watched anything with them in it. But I think the expression on my face was exactly like the guard art, just where he was just like, these people all need to chill out. I'm not sure this is something I would recommend right off the bat unless I knew the person was kind of into this sort of thing.
Yeah. I think it's definitely one that for theater people they would really like, you know. Like I said before, I like the first half during the rehearsal, but kind of once it gets going into the performances, I just kind of lost interest because it was just too much. But I got to give it to extreme creativity and a great cast. And like I said, I just don't think it's for everybody. But it's, you know, if you're remotely interested, pop it in. You know, worth giving a chance.
Yeah, it's definitely fun. Let's add Noises Off to our flick chart here, starting off with Noises Off versus Avatar.
I'm going to say Avatar because I actually did just watch that.
Steven?
Oh, sorry. I said Avatar.
Yeah, so did I.
Yeah.
Noises Off versus The Mummy Returns.
Ooh. I'm not a Mummy Returns fan, so I'd go with Noises Off.
I'm going to go with Noises Off.
Noises Off versus Batman Forever.
Oh,
it's a Val Kilmer one.
This is completely weird because I was reading about Batman Forever today.
I'd go Noises Off myself.
Noises Off.
Noises Off versus American History X. That's
a tonal
release.
Yeah, I'm from an American History X kind of guy on this one, but you're right, completely tonal difference.
Yeah, I'm going with American History X.
I can definitely go with that. Noises Off versus Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix.
Harry Potter for me.
Yeah, I'd have to go with the Order of the Phoenix.
The Order. Noises Off versus Revenge of the Fallen, Transformers.
Oh. Ooh, I'm going to have to go with Noises Off.
Oh. Oh. That's just...
Steven's having this debacle.
I'm scared.
He's having a moral dilemma.
What would you say?
I'm going to go with Noises Off on this.
Okay.
I think in this case, it's not necessarily what I would watch, because I would probably watch Revenge of the Fallen because I can actually watch that movie. Right. But I think that Noises Off is a better movie.
Okay. I'm down with that.
Noises Off versus The Strangers.
The Strangers.
The Strangers.
Oh, I hate you guys. Noises Off is 98 on our flick chart. Let's move on into the present, if I can find the button.
When does this happen in the movie?
Now. You're looking at now, sir. Everything that happens now is happening now.
Lawless. 66% fresh, 81% audience. Directed by John Hillcoate, starring Tom Hardy, Shia LaBeouf, and Guy Pearce. LaBeouf. And I really didn't like Guy Pearce in this movie.
See,
it's just the character.
I want to jump to the 800-pound gorilla in the room right away, because he's inevitably going to come up, but. What did you think of Shia, first off?
Oh, no, wrong 800-pound gorilla. He's not actually 800 pounds.
Okay, I will say
the monkey.
This.
He's the monkey.
Yeah, I was not. I had low expectations.
Mm-hmm.
But
because Shia LaBeouf is in this movie, right?
Right. But I will say that I wasn't. He impressed me because my expectations were so low. How does that make
sense? He wasn't annoying.
Right, exactly. Like I don't think that I necessarily thought, ooh, he's going to win an Oscar or anything like that for this film. But my expectations were so low that he impressed me. So, but again, for someone with so many movies under his belt, I would expect that he would give this kind of performance every time. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
Doesn't.
What about you, Jeff?
I thought he'd actually did a pretty good job.
Were you expecting not?
You know, honestly, I was expecting he was going to do a pretty good job. Because from what I saw in the trailer and, you know, his fellow actors, I don't think Tom Hardy or, despite his smaller role, Gary Oldman would satisfy this movie if Shia LaBeouf wasn't actually doing a decent job.
Mm-hmm.
It makes me think that the director gave Shia, or LaBeouf as I like to call him, gave him the direction he needed to. He's not the no sort of guy like he was in Transformers or Indiana Jones, maybe the one that never exists.
Yes.
So he's an actual. I think he actually brought out a character, and this was more serious acting.
You know, I just thought of something.
Mm-hmm.
This is completely random, but I just totally thought of it. I think one of the reasons he was really good at this movie, was he kinda played a douchebag.
He kind of did a little bit.
Do you know what I mean? Like, what as far as like, well, no. But I'm talking about, he was trying to be all like, yeah, I'm cool. look at all these things. You know, he's kind of building himself up. Oh, I get you. That type of... Yeah, he was playing, like, I'm building myself up. Maybe more of a tool than a douchebag.
See, here's where I'm conflicted. You know, like... here's where I'm conflicted about the whole douchebag analogy, though.
Yeah.
Because, I think I went in sort of dreading, you know, like, ugh, it's going to be bad. And he actually surprised me. And that's actually a very common thing I've been hearing for people who have actually watched it, that, you know, don't let the fact that he's in the movie, you know, make you not go see it or whatever. Don't hold that against the movie, because he actually does a somewhat decent job. But I think what really got me was, you know, he plays such a central, he's sort of, I think, the main, and I'd like to read the book, the main sort of thrust, as far as he's the one brother that is not overtly violent. Like, he has a hard time sort of dealing with that sort of stuff, as they sort of, you know, they just show you the quick scene in the beginning where those brothers are kind of like, come on, man, you got to shoot this thing.
Yeah.
And he's just like, he couldn't do it, you know.
Right.
And he's always looked up to his brothers as these two tough guys who can do all this stuff. You know, they've both been in fights, been shot, been in a war, you know, didn't die. You know, his claim to fame, yes, is he got sick and should have died but didn't. You know, but it's still not as a tough thing as what his brothers did. So I think the big thing was, he's always trying to sort of live up to what he believes the image of his brothers is. And
right.
Since he can't do it physically, he's sort of overcompensating with other things.
Right.
But the real sort of him comes out when, you know, when he's courting.
Right.
The girl, you know, I think the real him sort of comes out, like, I'm going to try to impress her in the ways that I can, you know, with all this sort of over the top, you know, the clothes and the car and all these things that she, you know, her daddy won't let her have. I'm, you know, that's the approach I'm going to take, you know. And I think that sort of thing in the character is what keeps me from going off and saying that, you know, he's just a douchebag.
Right. Well, you know, perhaps, like I said, perhaps douchebag is not quite the right term, and I, you know, transferred that to tool.
Mm.
And I say, but you defended my entire point.
Okay.
By what you just said, at least where I was thinking of it, was I liken it to the fact that Shia doesn't get a whole lot of respect in Hollywood because
mm-hmm.
he's not the best actor. And he's, you know, always, he's been in the news in recent because of, you know, doing stupid shit.
Mm-hmm.
So he's trying to impress people, probably. All this kind of stuff. And it just seems like, wow, he was typecast for this role. You know, with exception of toward the end, you know, right. What I mean? But at the same time, like, it kind of comes off like, oh, okay, this is life imitating art.
Right.
You know, But at the same time, like I said, though, I was impressed with his performance, whatever brought it out of him, whether the, you know, the director was saying, think of you, you know, or right. whatever. I don't know. Whatever his motivation was, he did do a good job.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I mean, I think with his character's relationship to his brothers actually are more of a, they love their little brother, despite the fact that he's such a wimp. And you know what? We're not going to take it from anybody. We're going to make sure that he's safe. We're going to be protecting him. That's why they didn't really want him to join the business or anything, because he could get into some trouble. And he's like, no, we're the indestructible ones. We're going to take this. We're going to make sure everything's working all right. You just sit back, relax, and enjoy the ride. And all LaBeouf's character wanted to do was, he wanted to be on the ride. You know, he wanted to be driving. He wanted to be part of it. He wanted to feel useful. And he tried his best and that he could. And his brothers, you know, just did their best to be like, look, I don't want to hurt somebody, but if you get in our way, you do something wrong us, we're going to hurt you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're like, look, just leave them out there.
You know, right.
It's the typical, you can make fun of, we can make fun of him, but you can't, kind of brotherly stuff going on too.
Right. Yeah, and I really enjoyed Dane DeHaan, who was, in my mind, channeling Leonardo DiCaprio in this. This is sort of his expressions. The guy who played Cricket.
Yeah, yeah, he was actually pretty good.
It took me a while because I kept looking at him and I'm like, where's this guy from? Where's this guy from? And then I remember, oh, he played Andrew in Chronicle. He was...
Oh, that was him. Oh, okay. The blonde hair.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't really... Yeah, okay.
So, yeah, that's where I was trying to... But I was like, yeah, he's really... Some of his expressions and stuff that he was putting on his face, I'm like, he's so channeling DiCaprio and some of his sort of looks and stuff. But I really enjoyed it, his sort of performance. So... I think he's going to be somebody to kind of keep an eye on in the future. You know, he sort of popped out of this as sort of, you know, once I realized who he was, I was like, oh, okay, this guy's, you know, I think he's going to be going places because he looks, you know, he's doing everything I've seen him in so far. He's done a really good job without coming off of this, like, over the top. Like, his character in Chronicle could have easily come off as, like, a spoiled brat sort of, you know, bad guy that you didn't really have any sympathy for, but I think he still reeled that in and you were able to still sympathize with the fact that, you know,
drove him there.
Right. Mm-hmm. So.
Okay. That's fair.
And so to the other 800 pound gorilla, the one that everybody wants to climb on top of, Mr.
Hardy.
The guy
who was supposed to be slimmer, but bulked up because of the Dark Knight Rises.
Didn't bother me.
Yeah. So, the first thing that kept going, I'm like, Steve's really going to enjoy this movie.
My God. And he was like the Southern, like, patriarchy kind of, oh my God.
and his voice was weird, though.
No, I don't, in
a couple ways. One was... And I feel like his voice in this movie was similar to the voice in The Dark Knight Rises. His voice was recorded later. That's what it sounds like. I don't know if that's actually what it is, but most of the time he's just grunting. Mm-hmm. And when he's actually saying something, either A, he doesn't complete a sentence, B, he sounds very loud and clear every single time. Well, not clear because he's doing an accent, which is making it not so clear, and it's like he's mumbling. But it's as if they recorded his voice later and boosted it all the way up so it was really loud.
Well, as I said to Fuzz pre-show, I didn't need him to speak. But since he did... since he did choose to speak, his accent was not that good. Let's just be as the Southerner of this group.
Forgivable.
Yeah, it was forgivable. But at the same time, it was just kind of like, I think he thought, if I draw it out and mumble, nobody will know my accent's this bad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it felt like, because he did not have a Virginia accent.
No, I had a hard time. Actually, I was having a hard time. Did they ever explicitly say they were in Virginia? Like, this is.
Yes.
Because I must have missed it.
And title cards.
Because they kept saying Franklin County, and my parents lived in Franklin County in Tennessee.
Tennessee, right. No.
So,
when it said Franklin County initially, I thought, ooh, Franklin County, this is going to be about Tennessee. And then they said
Franklin County, Virginia.
It might have. I'm just saying there is a Franklin County in Tennessee, and that's what I thought of.
Right. No, they said Franklin County at first, and my brother and I saw us together. So initially we're like, oh, they're in Tennessee. We both kind of looked at each other like that. And then there was a point, because at the beginning it just said Franklin County. And then at some point there was a dialogue where they talked about that they are in Franklin County, Virginia.
Okay.
I thought there was a title thing that says Franklin County come up.
I just remember it saying Franklin County. I didn't remember it saying Virginia. Maybe there was a title card, but I do remember it in conversation as well.
Mm-hmm.
And they talked about going to a couple of cities in Virginia. So that's when I realized, okay, they're in Virginia. Gotcha. But, you know, but as a whole, you know, truth be told, he's an interesting character despite his shortcomings, I think, Tom Hardy, in this one as the elder brother. you know, and as one who's kind of taken the reins of this whole operation and all this kind of stuff. So he's the godfather, you know. And, you know, Brando didn't speak too well.
Right.
You know, so I forgive him on some of those things. But at the same time, like, he was a talk softly but kick your ass kind of character. So when he was in action, like, it was hard to say that he wasn't doing a good job. Do you know what I mean? But his conversation skills were lacking in this movie.
Right.
You know?
So...
a smiley face.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of a common thread from our previous discussion. I saw this argument sort of going on the IMDb discussion for this movie. Was somebody was complaining about the fact that, and I didn't really notice enough to know when I was watching it, but apparently this whole film was shot digitally.
Okay.
And there were some people, or at least a couple of people, on that were complaining about using digital equipment to film, like, period films. Like, if it's going to be a movie set in older times, that you should be using film. I don't know if I agree with that. I really didn't think that this was shot such.
That feels picky as
yeah,
shit.
Yeah, it's, well, you know, I've seen that argument, but, like, there's the argument about, like, CDs versus albums. Like, albums sound better. And again, I do like film. I do enjoy, you know, stuff that is shot on film. Although I will admit that watching this in the theater, it didn't come off to me as a purely digital production. Like, you know, I wasn't sitting there going, you know, oh, this looks like it was shot on a digital camera. Because a lot of times when a film is too clean, that's sort of the assumption I make, is that it's shot on digital. I didn't get that. They may have gone through and
there was still a lot of authentic, you know, like, dusty and grimy. There was still a very dirty and grimy feel to this movie, you know, being in the, you know, not Old West, but they made it kind of feel like it was the Old West.
Right.
You know, and stuff like that. So it didn't, I think some of that probably saved it. Mm-hmm. If it was just shot inside all the time, you might have thought differently.
Right. And it looks like, for the most part, this movie was shot in Georgia. Mm-hmm. I just, you know, did you guys have any qualms with the way the movie was, the way it looked, or the way it seemed to be shot, or...
I had no qualms with the way it looked. Yeah. I thought it looked great.
Yeah.
You know, there's some pieces that we'll talk, you know, critically, you know, the critics, like, destroyed this film when it came to the acting, for the most part, but everybody liked the craftsmanship and the visuals. You know, there were some people who really specifically said that it looked great, but the acting just didn't carry the movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but nobody had any negatives to say about the look of the film.
Right.
At all. I couldn't find any. And if there were, it was very rare. But most everyone was just like, you know, it looked great. The setting was great. The houses and the costuming and the look of the characters was great. It was just more the story and or the acting that didn't pull it all the way through. So I didn't see anybody really harp on the fact that this digital media was awful, you know, or anything like
that. Yeah, if anything, most people that I had talked to you about the film, their major complaint was pacing.
Yeah.
There are parts of this film that seem like it just slows down to a crawl.
Mm-hmm.
I made a comment to Chad, who saw this movie with me, and he liked it, but he didn't like it, to use a high school vernacular.
It was all right.
Yeah. You know, he was just like, it's kind of long. And I'm like, you know, it's really not that long of a film. It's just a shade under 2 hours. But, you know, it does feel like a much longer movie, you know. This is 116 minutes. Does anybody remember how long Premium Rush was?
Hour 45, I thought.
So it's only
right about the same.
Yeah, it's only
81 minutes, an hour and a half.
Okay.
With Premium Rush. And this was 116.
Right. So not too big of a difference, but it felt like a huge difference.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Premium Rush was like blink and it's over. Like,
yeah. Maybe I was just very comfortable because mm-hmm. I went to go see this at the Nice Theater because I took my brother out for his birthday.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
So I was like in the, you know, like I was in the first class seats and kind of comfortable. So I didn't really care so much.
Right.
You know, I wasn't in an uncomfortable traditional seat or anything like that. So
I will say, because he is notorious for this, even though the pacing of this movie was extremely slow, Chad never fell asleep. So, because he has a tendency to fall asleep if a movie is sort of plodding along. But it kept his, you know, kept his interest. And the same thing with me. The one thing that I noticed is like the pacing is very, very slow. But when that something act like an action scene or something happens, it's brutal. It's like whacks you upside the head. So, you know, that has it going for it. And I sometimes think that's intentional. Like, you know, if you were to suck all of those the violence out of this film, it'd be a very sort of slow Walton-esque film. You know what I mean? It's like there's sort of that whole thing of the family and rebuilding and people being brought into this family. You know, everybody's got their little skeletons in their closet and all that stuff. And there's the pending romance between the two, you know, on opposite side of the tracks, you know, the Shia and the preacher's daughter,
mm-hmm.
you know, pull all the crazy violence out of it. And you've got yourself a, you know, lifetime movie of the week.
Hey, quick question here.
With a little Untouchables.
Yeah.
Speaking of the other side of the track. Was it just me, or did that church service seem really weird to you?
Because of the foot washing?
Yeah.
Oh, that foot washing is a very, very traditional religious
service. And the like the arm chopping. I mean, were they cheering for the Braves or something like that? I mean,
there were some Hall fans.
Just so it felt like a cult more than like a Christian ceremony or something like that.
Well,
I don't know. Those guys were creepy to me. That's just me.
Yeah, it's all a matter of location.
Yeah,
you know, a lot of people think the Amish are a cult. A lot of people think, you know, the Mennonites are a cult. You know, it all depends on perspective.
Yeah.
It's all perspective.
Yeah, to me, it's just like they're the North American version of
Pentecostal
or Jewish Orthodox. Like
that
they're
too.
Like
yeah, that too. Yeah.
So,
hence the beards.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, what did you guys think? Too. I know you talked about the violence and gore, but I have to say, you know, going into this movie, that was everything I had heard about this movie, that it was going to be violent and gory and all kinds of stuff. And there were people even asking our guys, we were, you know, waiting to get served or as we were checking in and stuff, that they were like, I hear this is really a gory movie, you know, and they're like, yeah, I mean, if you've seen any movie these days, you've seen violence and gore.
As I said, the smile.
Smile was a little. Yeah, that's intense.
Yeah, I don't think they did anything that was particularly shocking or made me. Other than there were some things that made me squirm like that.
Yeah.
I'll let you guys in a little secret. Anytime anything happens to somebody's neck in a movie, it freaks me out. Like that's my uncomfortable moment.
I squirm there too.
So
I was like, oh my god, oh my god, he's dead, he's dead, he's. I just gave him up for dead.
Yeah.
I'm surprised that he survived.
And you knew anything was intense. You knew everything was intense as soon as like Tom Hardy would go around that knuckle, that brass knuckle.
Yeah.
You know, and nothing good is coming from him having that brass knuckle in his hand.
Right.
You know, that was, you know, but
well, the thing about that brass knuckle is you never really see it until he's putting it away.
Right.
Because he's so fast at those punches and putting the damn thing on, he has to slip it over his fingers, whack the guy, and then just have his hand kind of quietly put it back in the pocket.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah, but and critically, I kind of already have kind of laid it out there, but on the positive end, again, everybody was really positive on the look and the environment and kind of the world that was being created by it. People had good things to say about Shia, and all in all, on the positives, they just kind of thought it was, just kind of rowdy, crowd-pleasing fun. Negatively, while the craftsmanship was great, the story just didn't let the whole thing kind of come together. Hardy's performance wasn't good. Some people were very critical on him. Haters. And one of these, there's really nobody to root for in this film because everybody is air quote bad.
Right.
Everybody's doing something wrong. Even the girl who's trying to escape Chicago was a stripper and a whore. Everybody was, so there was all these things that were wrong. The girl was trying to leave the church because of that. That's wrong. There was everybody, they were just dissing on, everybody was bad people. Why are we cheering for any of them? And then lastly, I'm not saying that. I agree.
I know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But, and then finally just that it was, an ambitious try, but just didn't hit. Mm-hmm. So that's what people thought.
I can't say that they're all bad people. You can say bad people in the fact that, look at the job they did on those guys that the Forrest and Howard did. And right. They sent it off to the special deputy.
Yeah.
And
it's also the depression.
The lady's trying to get away. She doesn't want to strip anymore. Isn't that a good thing?
I know, right? It's the Great Depression. It's the country and it's the Great Depression. You gotta figure, okay, what's gonna be the way to survive?
Yeah, and seriously, all they're really doing is a business. Sure, it's an illegal business, but really all they're just trying to do is make an honest buck by selling a product. It just happens the product ends up being illegal booze.
Right.
So it's really not. But I don't think of them as that bad. Sure, it's illegal.
But you could liken it to what the hell is the name of that marijuana film we saw?
Savages.
Savages. Thank you. Mm-hmm. You could liken it to that because we heard the same thing.
Right. Yeah. And really are in this case the Bondurants were our heroes. And to me, they felt like heroes. They just knew how to really cut people apart.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I was rooting for them. There was somebody to root for. What the hell is wrong with you critics?
True.
Anyways, what have we learned from this movie? We learned two things. Never assume that you walk yourself to the hospital. And Bondurants don't lay down for nobody. No, honestly, I really don't know what to say about this movie. It was all right. Maybe worth it the wait for DVD. I don't know. Watch the trailer, make your own judgment of whether you want to see it. I can't think of it as a priority to watch. It just didn't thrill me. It was all right. It was okay.
Yeah, it's, much like Tom Hardy's character in this film, the film itself is just sort of this slow, pondering mass. It's not exactly quick, but when it hits hard. Don't fear the Shia. I think for once he actually earned his pay on a movie. It's a hair under 2 hours long, but it's going to feel much longer. So I think one of the saving graces for me is that as I've gotten older, I've learned to sort of enjoy the sort of crime drama, which I never really liked when I was younger. But
I'm the same way.
So
I like trying to figure it out and follow the stories. Yeah.
Totally. So if you're into that kind of stuff, Godfather-y sort of stuff, but in a different time period, I would say go see it.
Mm-hmm. I actually like Shia in something. Where's the lightning? And also, while Tom Hardy may have been wooden in his portrayal of this patriarch, he really gave me. But I digress. He looked awesome in this movie. Anyway, I liked it. I did like the movie as a whole, though. You know, and I told my brother, I remember after the movie, I was just like, that really kind of reminded me of The Untouchables meets Young Guns.
Mm-hmm.
In some ways. You know, and there were definitely some memorable performances. Now, they may not have been memorable for the right reasons, but they were memorable. You know? So.
Alrighty.
Nice. All right. With that, on to something completely different.
Hi. Welcome to the future. And I'm telling you, it's great here.
Wreck-It Ralph, releasing
I was November, like, I'm going to start to say it.
Releasing November 2nd, 2012, directed by Rich Moore. With the voices of John C. Reilly, Jack McBrayer, Jane Lynch, and Sarah Silverman. The bad guy character in a classic video game who longs to be our hero brings trouble to his entire arcade after sneaking into a new first-person shooter game and unleashing a deadly enemy.
Yep.
Dun dun dun. Although I couldn't get that summary, I didn't quite get from the movie. I got that he went to other games, but I thought it was more of like,
yeah, they never really set up a. The trailer never really sets up an antagonist. I don't know what, like, the closest thing you come to an antagonist in this movie is like Jane Lynch's character when she's all being bitchy.
Right.
So they've really kept wraps on that part of the story. So I don't know if we're going to get any more trailers. We've only got the one, I think. They seem to be keeping a lot of this movie under wraps. I remember hearing stuff about this and seeing the artwork with the 8-bit character's face,
right, yeah,
and nothing else. And then when I went to Gay Days at Disney, I was really expecting there to be a huge sort of Wreck-It Ralph push because, you know, that movie's coming up. Nothing. There was nothing at Disney about this entire movie. So then I was kind of worried, like, well, obviously they're not really excited about this film because they're not even really pushing it anywhere. And the entire Disney, you know, anywhere we went, there was no mention of this film. But then when I finally saw the first trailer, I was just like, as soon as those old video game characters were in it,
Zangief, yeah,
I was like, oh my God, I'm going to love this movie.
Yeah, that's what I said too.
I heard that to get that scene with all those characters in it was a licensing nightmare.
I can only imagine.
I believe that.
Because it's one of those things, again, where, like, kind of like Who Framed Roger Rabbit, I think, you know, everybody wants equal time on the screen, you know, and you've got to pay for how much time each character is on and blah, 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 blah. So where I sort of was happy that all those characters were in the movie and they're you know, sort of paying homage to all these classic arcade games and video games. I was a little disappointed that we weren't actually going to get to go into those games.
Oh, yeah. You're going to have to go into make-believe games.
Right.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
Right. I would have loved to actually have him had to deal with going into these old...
Going to Street Fighter, running right. from Pac-Man.
But then that licensing thing just blows up, like, you know, all this craziness that you'd have to deal with. So I understand why it's not really like that. But kudos to the guys to at least not just make sort of pseudo copies of the old video game characters to actually go get them and bring them in.
I think it's
going to help the movie.
Yeah.
And I guess I'm sort of ashamed to admit this, but I'm totally bringing in Rule 34 on this thing, which are you guys familiar with what Rule 34 is?
I'm not familiar with Rule 34.
Why don't you share it with everyone?
Rule 34 is it's an internet rule. If it exists, there is porn of it.
Already?
Because I will say that I think the Wreck-It Ralph character is incredibly cute. And I have unfortunately been witness to some definite Rule 34s with him already on the internet.
Links.
Oh, wow.
I could give you some Tumblr links if you'd like.
Wow. Wow. Is he going to replace Optimus Prime is the question.
No, probably not. Yeah. So there's that. And Zangief.
Yeah, right.
I'm looking for some
Zangief. That's probably been around forever.
Yeah, some Zangief, Ralph crossover slash. I'm totally down for that. Anybody's up for making some of that?
Well, here, just in case you guys are interested, not to change the subject, but I looked it up just real quick. They have characters from Street Fighter. This is what is currently known, at least. Mm-hmm. Characters from Street Fighter, Sonic the Hedgehog, Pac-Man, House of the Dead, Super Mario Brothers, Q-Bert, Mortal Kombat, Altered Beast, Paperboy, and Frogger.
Oh, I love that whole scene where Fix-It Felix talking to Q-Bert.
Mm-hmm. My Q-Bertese is a little weak, but here we go.
Oh, and apparently Wreck-It Ralph will be accompanied by a Disney short film called Paper Man.
Okay.
Downside to all of this, we have no room for this movie.
No room whatsoever.
Yeah, because I don't want to get rid of plenty of the movies that I picked.
That's okay. Regardless if it's on our list or not, I'm pretty sure this is going to be a C for me. Another little interesting bit that I'm just learning of, seeing I'm on the Wikipedia page, so take this with a grain of salt. Wikipedia is not always 100% correct.
What?
It's completely accurate. What are you talking about?
I'm mad at you for saying that.
I guess it's
like the Bible's not true.
Whoa.
Sorry.
Whoa. Letters.
My fault.
I guess Skrillex. Jeff said that. Skrillex is going to be responsible for some of the music in this. So I know there's some dubstep lovers and haters out there. It's going to be interesting to see if it's parts of the game. I guess the director announced, he goes, popular dubstep musician Skrillex will be writing all of the music for a particular part of the game. I think the Hero's Duty part is going to be dubstep. So
what I think is a good guy plays a bad guy for his job and doesn't want to be a bad guy anymore. It's the story of Donkey Kong get animated. Totally want to see it.
Yeah, it's, let's see, animated, has old video game characters in it. There's Rule 34. Yeah.
Wrong. Initially, I didn't think I'd care for the cast other than like Jack McBrayer and Jane Lynch. But as with Megamind, I seem to be liking their voices in the roles. I am not, and you guys, I am not a John C. Reilly person at all. But, you know, but he sounds like Seth Rogen, which is the hilarious part of his entire time. And it seems like it's going to be a fun story that'll combine, you know, things with a blast from the past. I'm definitely looking forward to it.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably going to be something that I would see myself buying eventually.
Nice.
And that's it. That's our show. Look at that. Almost an hour and a half has already gone by. Anyways, next week we're going to be taking a look at Blood Guts, Blood Guts, Bullets and Octane. In the past and the future, we'll be taking we'll take a look at Gangster Squad. In the future, the Wachowskis, Cloud Atlas. There's plenty of ways of contacting us. You pop over to our website, colmovies.com. Leave a comment on the blog. Shoot us an email, colmovies@gmail.com. Leave us a voicemail, 361-265-8255. Give us a call, 361-COL-TALK. Pretty easy. Also, follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/colmovies. Facebook at facebook.com/colmovies. Google+@gplus.2/colmovies. Pop over to iTunes. Leave us a 5-star review. We very much appreciate that. And with that, any final thoughts?
Oh, funny story.
Hmm.
I just saw that it was announced last month that Ralph will actually be a playable character in Sega's game Sonic All-Stars Racing Transformed.
Sweet. Nice. I did know that I don't know if it's the full game, but the I think the video game that Wreck-It Ralph is in the movie is available on iTunes, the App Store. Probably
that
Android.
It's hilarious.
Oh. Nice. Okay, so for me, for Fuzz, for Steven.
I'm mad at you.
Take care, everybody.
Hasta la vista, baby.
I wish I knew how to quit you.
That'll do, kid.
That's the worst goodbye I've ever heard. And you stole it from a movie.
He's looking at you, kid.
End of line.
Fuzz, I cannot unsee that. I'm so mad at you right now.
You're welcome.
That's a great way to end the recording.
You're welcome.